three doors down.
I'm going to call to order a regular meeting for the Grover Beach City Council for Monday, October 17, 2011. Would you all please stand with us and have a moment of silence for a loved one that's recently passed, and then remain standing for our flag salute. Thank you. So our flag salute tonight is being led by Jacob Boss. And Jacob, as you can all see, is very excited. We're so glad to have you here, Jacob. He's 9 years old and a fifth grade student at Grover Heights Elementary School. He likes learning new subjects and spending time with his friends on the playground. Jacob loves living by the ocean and how nice and friendly everyone is on the Central Coast. He would like to study engineering when he is older, and he loves spending time with his
friends. America, and to the Republic for which it stands. One nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Jacob, and we have something for you. Come up here. This is a certificate of appreciation for coming and leading us in the pledge. Can you look over there and take a picture? Look at your mom. So that's for you and some supplies. So you shake everyone's hand.
Okay.
Doing a good job. Thank you.
Thanks for being here.
Thanks again, Jacob, and keep up the great work in school. So, Donald, when you're ready, roll call.
Here.
Thank you, Donna. Okay, let's move on to closed session announcements. City Attorney.
Thank you, Honorable Mayor, Council members. On Monday, October 3rd, after the closed session, the council convened back into open session on one item, which was negotiation regarding sale or lease of property, with Crown Castle being the negotiating party, and terms and extensions of the lease or potential sale being the negotiated terms. After convening back into open session, there were no reportable actions taken. Thank you.
Thank you, City Attorney. Let's move on to our agenda review. This is where the council will review the order of the agenda that's presented by staff, and we'll decide if we want to make any changes to the agenda. Do any members of the council want to change the order of the agenda?
I'll make a motion that we accept the agenda as presented.
I'll second that.
Okay, there's a motion. There's a second. If there's no discussion, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? None. Motion carries. So we are going to proceed with the agenda as presented to the council. So let's move on to our ceremonial calendar, and this is item number one. This is a proclamation declaring Red Ribbon Week on October 23rd through the 31st of 2011. And Chief Copsey, are you accepting the proclamation? Okay, so I'll read them into a healthy, drug-free lifestyle. And whereas Red Ribbon Celebration will be observed across the United States during Red Ribbon Week, October 23rd through the 31st, 2011. And whereas parents, youth, government, business, law enforcement, schools, religious institutions, service organizations, social services, health services, media, and the general public will demonstrate their commitment to drug-free communities by wearing and displaying red ribbons during this observance. And whereas Red Ribbon Week highlights local substance abuse prevention programs that involve youth and parents yearly through local youth coalitions and numerous countywide organizations such as Friday Night Live, DUI Prevention Task Force, the Slow Substance Abuse Prevention Alliance, and the Slow County Drug and Alcohol Services. And whereas the City of Grover Beach further commits resources to help the success of Red Ribbon Celebration and year-round tobacco, alcohol, and other drug prevention efforts, And whereas Red Ribbon Week 2011 will be highlighted by the elementary schools in Grover Beach, now, therefore, be it resolved that the City Council of the City of Grover Beach hereby supports October 23rd through the 31st, 2011, as Red Ribbon Week and encourages all citizens to participate in tobacco, alcohol, and other drug prevention activities, making a visible commitment to healthy communities in which to raise a generation of drug-free youth. Wow, that's a long proclamation. So, Chief Copsey.
Oh, no, she was going to do another.
Mayor, do you mind if I say a couple of things?
No, not at all. You have the floor.
First off, I want to thank the mayor and the council for your tremendous support in supporting the Red Ribbon Week for our community, the schools, the principal here, new principal in our Grover Heights. It gives us an opportunity to recognize this week at least once where we can take a stand against drugs and work with our kids and our families in our community. So thank you for that. And hopefully our community will get involved with the schools, the elementary schools that we have, and participate in this next week. So thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Chief. Did any members of the council have any comments they'd like to make? No? Okay. Let's move on to item number 2 on our ceremonial calendar tonight, and this is drawing for 5 gift baskets to be awarded to the participants in the Savor the Central Coast event.
So it features the uniqueness of the Central Coast. So it was from the north to the south, and it was in auxiliary events in Morro Bay and Pismo and all over the county from Thursday through Sunday. And the city participated in the main event, which is at the ranch on Saturday and Sunday. And a brief summary that was provided by the Visitors Conference Bureau was that there was an estimated 3,000 people who participated in the weekend event alone. All of the auxiliary events that were held the days before were all sold out. Was very popular. They stated that there was over 100 media in attendance from all over the state and country. There was 200 wineries represented. There was 30 restaurants and 8 culinary vendors. This is a picture inside the pavilion, and our city booth was a participant in the pavilion. And our theme for the city booth was beach party. And with the assistance of Councilmember Peterson in helping develop the uniqueness of Grover Beach and highlighting the beach, we focused on the things like the bonfire and the beach party and the off-road riding that you can do for our beach town. So that when people came into our booth, we talked about the uniqueness of those things that you really can't do in any other city. And we also provided marketing material, our maps, our business brochures, our stickers, and business cards. And we also highlighted gift baskets contests, which are the 5 gift baskets in front of you this evening. And we had over 440 people actually register inside of our city booth once we got them inside the booth to register, and they were entered to win for tonight's drawings. And here's some pictures from the event. This is our booth. We featured a rolling slideshow of beautiful scenery shots of our city. And that was right up front and center. And we also had our little ATV there. And we also had the mayor and his wife assisting, answering questions about the city. And we had lots of volunteers helping run the booth. And Councilmember Bright, as well as Peterson, assisted in talking to people as well. These are some of the sponsors that helped provide all of the items that are in the gift baskets. And there's another page of this. I just wanted you to see this first, just to see that we had over 30 businesses graciously donate services, monetary. Actually featured a lot of the things that you can do. So essentially there was one sign that said, bonfire, you are here. Then it's talked about the Amtrak, the skate park, horseback riding, Stone Soup Music Fair, ATVing, those types of things. And Commissioner Jeff Lee and his wife actually built that on their own.
Oh, wow.
And this is the last slide And this basically gives you the idea of what we had as another unique feature of our booth, was that people were allowed to have a photo op in front of a bonfire. And we actually used their own smartphones so they could upload them to their own Facebook pages or forward them to their kids or friends and say, just had a bonfire in Grover Beach, and a little s'more set up and everything. So at this time, we have all of the names of the people who entered in this little beach bucket. And we would like to ask each council member to pick one name from the bucket to select our five prize drawing winners. No peeking.
No, because mine's in there. Do you want me to do it?
Yeah, go ahead and speak.
Linda Lindsay.
Great. Down to that.
Okay, hold on.
Okay, Mr. Nichols.
Looks like Krister Coleman.
Karen Porter.
Kimberly Contell.
Emily Chavez.
Great, thank you.
So congratulations to all of our winners. And I did want to say great job to Kathy and the team. The booth looked fantastic, and we got a lot of compliments from folks who had either come and saw the booth and who were walking around on the general grounds. Total, any items within the interest of the jurisdiction of this council, please understand that the council will listen to all communications. However, in compliance with the Brown Act, we cannot take action on any items that are not on the agenda. So public communications is for any item not on the agenda. So let me open it up. And I do have one speaker request form at this time, Ms. Anita Shower.
Good evening. My name is Anita Shower. I live at 867 North 6th Street in Grover Beach. The issue this evening is the limited two-hour parking on Grand Avenue, which is apparent in our business district between 8th and 10th Streets on Grand Avenue. Except for the south side of the 800 block on Grand Avenue, where there isn't a two-hour sign posted. I bring this to the city's attention tonight, although I did bring it to the city council, the city's attention shortly after Ron moved from South 13th Street to the 800 block of Grand Avenue, and he is currently in the building that used to belong to Bob Hullett, where Bob had the Fairlane department store. I was told by the city that this parking matter might best be remedied if the business owners would get together to iron out the issue. Mr. Ron Carlock has made many overtures to Captive Hearts, asking that they limit their parking on the street in the 800 block, so that the customers of the businesses on the 800 block of Grand Avenue might have on-street parking for the businesses in the area. Mr. Carlock suggested to Captive Hearts that they could possibly park around the corner in the lots behind the building and on the street behind the building. Mr. Carlock also spoke to the other businesses on the street. Thus far, Captive Hearts has continued to park on Grand Avenue in front of their businesses and the other businesses for as long as they want, all day long. I am bringing this to your attention because it was brought to my attention. Perhaps the city administration could host a meeting of the business owners on Grand Avenue between 8th and 10th Streets to see if other businesses are suffering because of this excessive on-street parking. It's mostly done by the business owners and their employees. If business owners and employees continue to hoard the on-street parking in front of their businesses and directly behind their businesses, it is going to be detrimental to the health of our business community. Before this meeting tonight, we did a little survey of all the parking signs on Grand Avenue between 4th Street and 11th Street.
It's the Free Fall Art Benefit. It's one of our two major events for this year, inviting everyone to come out and, you know, buy some art, watch some bands, partake in some wine, beer, food, have a good time with our chapter, and, you know, basically just between 11 a.m. and 5 p.m. So a couple points to make about the sanitation district tonight. They've had a problem all summer with the BOD readings, and particularly having to do with the measurements of BOD coming from Abalone Coast Labs. They found some different results coming from other labs, so they've been trying to weigh out what they would do about it. The minutes from their last meeting show what they decided to do about it, because Abalone Coast was continually high, and they're trying to figure out what to do about the high readings, was just to essentially fire them. So Abalone Coast is no longer doing the testing for their BOD. Now, having a science background and a bachelor's degree in science and having some familiarity with statistics, if you have three different data sources and one of them is not like the others, it doesn't mean that you necessarily throw them out. The Water Board has recommended that they simply do an average. And as somebody who represents people who in this district essentially are swimming in sewage or have a threat of swimming in sewage, I recommend that the board of directors err on the side of safety and continue to use Abalone Coast, whether it's convenient or not. So another question for your representative on the sanitation district. Also not mentioned in the minutes were any responses that the council and Surfrider had regarding the civil grand jury findings. So we're still waiting for those. We'd like to see those announced in a very public way to come out in the minutes, because we still aren't attending those meetings at the sanitation district, and we will continue to monitor those. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Snook. Is there anyone else to see if the council want to pull any items from consent?
No.
Okay, I have no request from the public to pull any items from consent. Someone prepared to make a motion on these on the consent agenda?
I'll move for staff's recommendation.
I second that.
Okay, there's a motion and a second. If there's no additional discussion, roll call.
Yes.
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 Yes. Let's move on to our regular business. This is item number 5, and this is a discussion and direction to staff regarding potential smoking regulations in public facilities in the city. So this is going to be a joint staff report, or is this the city attorney?
Thank you, Honorable Mayor, council members, and it will be a joint staff report. we're here before you, consistent with your instructions. This item has been considered by you on two separate occasions. Basically, we have investigated and brought to you the way that various local agencies deal with additional smoking restrictions in public areas. As you are well aware, the state law provides for a buffer zone of 20 feet from any public facilities. There are also state laws that deal with smoking regulations that govern the employees and health facilities. That all has been laid out and is attached to your staff report. Your latest instruction was to have the Parks, Rec, and Beautification Commission consider this item and provide you with a recommendation. They did so. The minutes are included in your staff report, and their recommendation is that smoking should be regulated or prohibited in all city's parks, going all the way to the curb, as well as during city-sponsored events, for example, the sizzling summer concert series and other like that. We are here to take direction from you as to the next step. Your options are to either direct us to start preparing an ordinance which would put into effect more stricter regulations over and beyond what the state law provides for, and prohibit smoking in public parks and other public areas. If that is your wish, or you may wish to simply allow the state law to continue to be in effect in the city without us moving forward with any additional regulations. With that, I'll submit and gladly answer any questions.
Great, thank you for that.
Provide for areas and control of smoking within health facilities, certain health facilities. If it is the desire of the council to explore further restrictions, and these restrictions, again, deal with employees, and they're generally limited to publicly accessible areas, we will move forward and provide as an aggressive of an approach to that issue as the council desires. It will take some maneuvering around state law. There are certain areas that are preempted, and there are certain areas where the city can enact its own regulations. One of the issues that continues to, at least from our standpoint, needs to be brought to your attention is the city's ability to enforce whatever regulations are put into effect.
So my question then would be, currently, if a resident has a problem who resides next door to a licensed health facility, such as residential care or child care, and they call and make a complaint about that, how is that taken care of at this point?
It would depend on the nature of the complaint, but I'll turn it over to the chief with regard to what the city can do on that.
Thank you. And to answer your question, if we get a complaint regarding smoking, if it's at a currently Title 22 restricted facility, there are certain health facilities that may be a health facility but doesn't apply to them. They would only be controlled by their own policies, not basically state laws. If it is controlled by Title 22, then we can ask them not to continue to smoke. If it's not, there's absolutely nothing we can do about it at this point unless we have an ordinance that governs outdoor activities or something from the outdoors that somebody would complain about. And if we do have an ordinance, then we would answer the complaint the best that we could with the police staff.
Okay. I do believe that residential care facilities are part of the Community Care Licensing Division, which is Title 22.
Yes.
I know from my own experience having a licensed child care center.
Yes.
That they're included. Okay, because I do know of some residents in the city that have had problems with that, but they've always been faced with no one would ever do anything for them. So that's why I was wondering if we should consider including this, because we do have quite a few residential care facilities in the city.
Well, there are certain specified laws that residential care facilities do, but should the council choose to restrict that further, then they can do that, and we can look at that.
Isn't it supposed to be within 20 feet of any open doors or windows?
It depends on where they designate the specific smoking location. It may not be within 20 feet. They may not. It may be in it could be indoors. So it depends on where it's designated as part of the facility, to my knowledge.
All right. Thank you.
Councilmember Bright.
Oh, okay. Well, then, my question really was... The minutes weren't really real detailed, so I don't know if there was discussion regarding the beach and if we're even able to regulate smoking on our portion of the beach, or if our council would even be interested in pursuing that. I personally would, but so I don't know really how far that went with the Planning Commission. I don't see any mention of that in the minutes.
If you would, Mayor.
I guess that's kind of a question.
It's a good question, and I was present during the Parks and Vacation Committee meeting, and they focused on mostly the parks that we have in our city. We do have, they talked about the beaches, but we do have some restrictions there since it's not our jurisdiction.
Okay.
If there was something that the state wanted to enact, we could help support that, maybe if the council chose to do that, or we could help maybe if we had some joint something written up, we might be able to help enforce something like that should they choose that. But I don't think at this point we really can
Okay, so we can't enforce it?
We can't, no, we can't make an ordinance that covers estate properties.
Okay, I understand that. So then, just to follow up on Ms. Molnar's interest, so then, if we have a residential care facility, they have the right to, or maybe not even a right, but they are required to designate a smoking area, whether it be inside or outside of this residential care facility or whatever care facility it is. So they specify a smoking area, and if it's 5 feet from some neighbor's window or patio door, then is that beyond our control?
And in the Title 22 facility, they're mandated to provide a smoking mm-hmm. area both for their employees and also for assist mm-hmm. in changing the arrangement.
Okay. So, but as far as us enforcing something, that would be rather difficult,
if even feasible.
So then what about a private residence? Is there some kind of exemption to this smoking ordinance for private residences? Not a residential facility, but a private residence.
The city is not in position, or at least legally, the city is not in a position to control smoking or not smoking in private property.
Okay, on private property.
With the exceptions of the Title 22 facilities.
Okay. Thank you. I think that's it for now.
Okay. Mayor Pro Tem, do you have any questions?
I'm kind of baffled by the smoking regulations from a standpoint that it's hard to tell people that they can't smoke if they want to smoke. That's a privilege, a prerogative that they have. At the same time, I think as we learned just recently, when President Obama tried to put through legislation that would require people to buy health insurance, that was shot down, if I'm not mistaken, so we cannot do that. I wonder if we could create some sort of legislation where if a person gets ill and goes to the doctor, and the doctor diagnoses that illness and can substantiate that it's a result of smoking, can we then deny that person public medical care? They have chosen to poison themselves with cigarettes, and then they come to the public and ask for medical assistance at our expense instead of their own. So if we could legislate that, that might be the direction to go, but I don't think it's going to work. But I am perplexed by it because people have a right to smoke, but I do think in public places we have a right to restrict that, and I think we should pursue that.
Okay. This is I don't have any questions at this time. This is a business item, but I know that there's probably someone interested in the audience, so I'm going to open this up to the public and see if there's someone who'd like to address the item before the council tonight. Please come forward and state your name and city of residence for the record.
Hello. Wait. Is that better? Melissa Peters from the County of Obispo has a comprehensive smoking law which allows no smoking outside in any public place. Residents can smoke inside their homes only and on their residential properties, but cannot go onto city property and smoke. So in that regard, they cover a big area of San Luis Obispo. Arroyo Grande has smoke-free city parks, Morro Bay, smoke-free beaches and piers, and Paso also has restrictions on smoking. We at the program would like to offer support as you guys work through this ordinance. We have services through our program to offer to the residents of Grover Beach if they are struggling. I know that smoking, we like to consider all citizens have the right to breathe clean air. And so outdoor areas, taking your family to the city parks and city areas, we feel like we need to protect those citizens as well. We offer services such as education on smoke-free areas, education on secondhand smoke, third-hand smoke, all for free through our program. We also offer quit smoking classes to citizens of the county, and also have one running in Grover Beach, actually at the Grover Beach Public Health Department. It meets tomorrow at 6 o'clock at the Grover Beach Public Health Department, and a new series of those classes starts actually in a couple weeks. So they run 6 weeks, and they're completely free to all the citizens of Grover Beach as well as throughout the whole county. So from our program in San Luis Obispo at the Public Health Department, we just want to offer our support as you guys work through this ordinance, and we hope that you get it. Okay, I'm just going to walk right now.
Thank you, Melissa. Yeah.
Do you have a contact phone number for the tobacco control?
Yes, my contact phone number is 805-781-1561. And we also have a cessation specialist in my department as well, and I can transfer you to her if you have questions on that subject.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, Melissa.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else that would like to address this item before the council? Seeing that, I'm going to close and bring it back to the council. And so tonight we are just going to decide if we want to. Okay. So
now, this would be in the city parks all the time, such as what Aurora Grande
is. Yeah, so let me get some clarification. So I believe the Park and Recs and Beautification Commission suggested city parks, but they had talked about the sidewalk adjacent to the city parks too, correct? Mm-hmm. I thought they'd even talked about going beyond that, but
including the sidewalk.
Including the sidewalk.
So someone could park and smoke in their car.
So I think we are talking about basically prohibiting in city parks and, I guess, the adjacent sidewalk. But I guess that gets a little...
What about the parking space areas surrounding the park? That's certain. I mean, that's the kind of direction that we would be looking from you if there's interest in expanding.
So then that means they can go smoke out in the middle of the street?
I don't know.
Hit by a car.
101. I understand. Mm-hmm. I understand. So I just, you know, everyone else, I think most people had made statements or raised questions, and I am not against smoking regulations. I am certainly against government intruding upon a person's right to use their property. So I'm glad to see we are not going in that direction. So I want to make sure that what we do is fair and it's equitable, because I think that's obviously our job, to try and provide some balance. So it looks like we're talking parks. The question is, do you go to the parking, not only the sidewalk, but the parking spaces beyond that? Chief Copsey.
And just to mention, too, they did discuss in the committee meeting about 20 feet from the park. So, you know, they were supportive of that. So it could, you know, and it depended on, you know, where the council would like to go on that. So they included not only just a sidewalk, but they talked about across the road. They talked about different things. So at some point, there's going to have to be a cutoff point where somebody may not smoke near a park. So that's up to you.
Councilmember Mohner.
I think we should just limit it to the sidewalk, and person has every right to sit in their car and smoke if they wish. You know, if they're in a parking space, that's more or less considered the public area, you know, the street. And I think that the parks don't have access. I mean, that's not considered part of the park property. So I don't think we should restrict parking spaces.
Okay. I agree with you. So is that your consensus
on that? So can I clarify on that? What we're saying is it's okay if they smoke in their car in the parking lot. Can they smoke outside their car in the parking lot?
Are we talking the parking lot, or are we talking the parking spaces?
Yeah, we're talking parking spaces.
And if we're talking about Ramona, there are parking spaces on
sides. So I guess the question is yes. So basically we're prohibited in the park and on the adjacent sidewalk, and that's that.
Yes, that's right. Okay. To the sidewalk, right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So then I want to also get clarification that when we talk about city parks, we're also talking about city facilities.
On the street.
Right.
Yes.
So within the confines of the sidewalk.
Yes.
I think is reasonable.
Okay. Great. So I think I think that's pretty clear. I think that should be something that staff can take that direction and come back with an ordinance.
One other clarification, if I may, Mayor. So we're looking at park property and Trouville. We're not looking at all city property.
You mean like City Hall?
I mean like any piece of property that city owns. It could be City Hall. There are portions, I think, where a chamber is located that are owned by the city. I want to bring back something that is consistent with your direction. So this is the time to shape it, at least initially. We can always make changes to it, obviously, when it comes before you.
May I say something?
Yes, you may. You have the floor.
I'm thinking that for consistency's sake, just any city building or park or facility within the confines of the sidewalk, smoking is prohibited. I don't know if that's possible because I don't really know all the properties we're discussing, but
yeah.
I'm just saying to make it simple.
So why don't we give them that direction and then let's see what staff comes back with. And special I think at events. That point.
Oh, and special events.
And special events, yes. Yeah.
And are you going to
city include special events on city property?
Yeah, like the holiday parade. How can you tell people they can't smoke while they're watching the parade?
Okay. The good news is we're giving staff direction. They'll be coming back with an ordinance, and if we want to refine it or make it more restrictive or relax it, we can do that at the time. These are all really good thoughts, and we'll have further discussion and debate on this. Okay?
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, so let me move on. Okay, we're going to go to item number 6, which is a potential AT&T lease of city-owned parking lot, and I think Councilmember Peterson.
I'm going to recuse myself because I live within 500 feet of this particular property.
Okay. So we will give her a time to clear the room.
Grand Avenue on the top. This is a Rockaway that terminates into the city-owned parking lot. It's basically the gray shaded area here. This is the parking lot to the north, which is associated with Grand Junction. It's not part of the city parking lot. AT&T recently submitted a development application proposing to install an 80-foot tall monopine wireless communications antenna on the south portion of the site. So a little bit more crude map, but this is Rockaway right here that terminates. Here's the entrance to the trash facility. This is the parking lot here. This would be the eucalyptus windrow that runs along the eastern edge. As proposed, right now they would be installing the equipment at the very southeast corner of the site. It would eliminate about 3 parking spaces, and the monopine of the antenna itself would be located in this interior island. It's approximately about a 550 square foot lease area in the total areas of both. So since this proposed project is on city-owned property, we're here tonight just to ask the council for authorization to process this. Basically, we're the city is the property owner. We need to sign the application in order to process it. To give you some background about what's been going on, in the last probably 6 months, staff has received several inquiries from wireless providers specifically looking in this area for new wireless communication facilities. As a result of that, we're actually in the process right now of reviewing 2 applications. One is for T-Mobile, and they're proposing to locate their antenna in the cupola of the building at 170 West Grand. In other words, where Station Grill is, there's a cupola. They want to put an antenna that's totally hidden within the cupola. There's no opportunity for co-location with that because it's basically only enough room for one antenna. The second application we've received in the last couple months is for Verizon. That location is at 3rd and Long Branch. So you take 3rd Street south of Rockaway there, and you kind of come to a not much of an intersection, but there is a proposed location there. That's about a 63-foot tall monopine, and that Verizon would the proposal from Verizon will be to allow two additional co-locations there. So I give you that for background so you understand. We're getting a lot of inquiries. There are approximately, this permit application would require public hearing by the Planning Commission for consideration of the project. At this point, staff would include a condition that the Planning Commission approval would be contingent upon Council's approval of the lease, because so ultimately the Council does have the final authority in approving this type of application. AT&T has submitted a letter of intent outlining the proposed terms of the lease. Staff would point out that the Council, the item before them tonight is solely to authorize the processing of the development application and not to discuss or negotiate terms of the lease at this time. So in conclusion, staff is recommending that the Council authorize staff to process the development application.
Okay, thank you, Bruce. Any questions of staff? Councilmember Monar.
Okay. So the photo that was given to us here of the simulated tree, that's what it would look like?
As proposed. Recall, they have submitted an application. Staff has not given them any feedback or reviewed the application. The first step was to get authorization, so we would review the project then.
Is there any concern as to conflict with the, I don't know, understand the technology of it, but at broadcasting to interfere with anything with the police radio or?
They do need to provide radio frequency report and that type of information would be in there. Yes, obviously we would need to be ensured it wouldn't interfere with any public safety or any other types of receptions in the area.
And how long was this lease going to be for if we decide to do this?
Have it in front of me.
And again, the terms of the lease, the price, how long the lease is, all of that, if and when this project gets off the ground and passes the Planning Commission for approval, will come before you in the proper forum. And a proper forum for that, I would recommend, would be closed session.
All right. Thank you.
No more? Okay. Mayor Pro Tem Nichols.
One question: why is this normal for them to bring before the council a request to process an application? I mean, why? It seems to me like they just make their application and it goes before the Planning Commission and it follows the usual procedure. I'm not sure why this is happening.
In this particular instance, staff just took a conservative approach because it's on city-owned property. We wanted to make sure that you were even interested in having the application processed.
Okay.
Going to 100 feet, and quite frankly, I don't even know how if they're capable from an engineering standpoint to go that high. So the bottom line is if you have four or five in this area, you would likely need two facilities in order to provide service for all of those providers.
Okay. But right now, we have three interested parties.
This would be a third application, so all three right now are going their individual routes, if you will. That's why staff has been encouraging co-location, so that basically would put an end, that would be the limit in this area, that you would have two monopines that would accommodate four, five, six, and then the T-Mobile who have gone alone on within the cupola of the Grand Junction building. So, again, this doesn't have to accommodate three. This could accommodate less.
What are the economics that we're talking about here? Obviously, they're going to pay the city, and the city's going to have an income. What are we talking about?
Again, the letter of intent proposed a number. That's just for AT&T to operate. If some future provider comes along and wants to be on this monopine, then that provider would pay an additional lease payment.
Bruce, maybe I can pick that up. Honorable Mayor, Council Members, Mayor Pro Tem, currently the leases that are in existence, and we can talk about that, range in income to the city from $30,000 to $58,000 a year.
Okay, thank you.
Councilmember Wright, do you have anything?
I have no questions, thank you.
Okay.
I have one more.
Okay, Councilmember Monar.
As part of this, they are proposing to have it look like a pine tree, right? there's no way that they're going to come in and then just suddenly give us a bear like we have on the Hill already.
You know, actually, I will tell you that in my conversations with them, I've asked for details about, you know, the faux trees are getting better in their appearance, and so I've already indicated that the council would only want the highest quality, if you will. So.
Okay. All right, thank you.
So, I mean, I got a couple of questions.
And Mayor Scholes, I would indicate, unfortunately, the applicant's representative had an emergency come up, and she was not able to be here tonight. So I don't have anybody who can answer any of the technical questions.
Oh, you think I'm going to ask you some technical questions? Well, it is not just the height of the tree. As I understand it, in the three parking spaces, they are going to have their equipment in something that could look like a C-train. You know, and obviously architecture review is something the commission will have to take a look at. So that's a concern, because there's a vacant lot, primarily vacant lot, immediately west of this or east of this. And then, you know, I know there had been talk in the past about the possible relocation of the storage yard for the garbage trucks that are there. So I just want to make sure that we are not being short-sighted in reviewing this and that we're looking at what's the overall vision. The other thing is, I agree, we're not going to talk about the lease in terms and things of that nature, but I think it would behoove us, if that is the direction of the council majority, would that be done concurrently or in advance of, if in fact we're going that direction. The other thing is, I believe that if we are going to go in this direction, that there has to be some discussion about what's the value of the parking. I think parking is an issue, and so we want to be very, very careful about that. The fourth thing was the issue of, and I guess it's a good thing that we've got quite a bit of interest from, at least you said, three applications at this particular time, one in the existing cupola on Grand Junction, raising that 2 feet. I think that's probably something they'll be able to accommodate with very limited impacts. But I am curious to see what's going to go on the corner of, you said, Long Branch and Third. And so should we ultimately look for a policy that kind of collates and so we don't end up with all these faux pines all over the city? You know, I think that's kind of contrary to where we want to go with this. And then finally, I think to Phyllis's point is, I know in the past when we've had projects like the project on 4th and Rockaway, when the commission approved it and the council was very limited in its review, like there was a policy that came out that said if there is any project and any part of that project has to come to the council, that the entire project comes to the council with the recommendation from the planning commission. So I think if we're going to go down this road, I think that would give me a little more comfort, because I can just tell you, for the designer and me saying, why that location, why not closer to the railroad tracks, and there's a space, and there, it looks like there's an oversized landscape area. So, but I'm not going to bring that up.
So is there an alternative site from each of these companies?
That's an issue that will be discussed during the consideration of the project, not at this stage yet. And if there is a federal law to that effect, then obviously they would have to comply.
Yeah, I agree with that. So it will be looked at. So it's a good question, and it's something that'll be looked at. Okay. Is there anyone else? Okay, I'm going to close it to the public, bring it back to the council. So, what's the pleasure of the council? They are requesting permission to process an application.
I would move that we go ahead and approve that. Tell them yes, go ahead and process it.
What does processing mean?
That's right, and that's I'm glad you said that, because process does not necessarily mean that it will be approved.
I think what is before you tonight is simply, as the property owner, the city of Grover Beach has to initiate the process of the application. The project that is being applied for would ultimately be on city property. And I think staff, as Mr. Cunningham identified, conservatively brought it before you, before we even initiated that process, to basically get your approval to start the process as the property owner. Mm-hmm. This does not mean that the project will be approved. This does not mean that the project will be in the exactly the format that was presented in the renderings. What I will make you aware of is that you do have the ability to request that the item be processed through the Planning Commission as a recommendation, in which case it will come before you for a final decision combined with a potential lease. Our code does provide for, as you identified, yes. Mayor, and if any part of the approval process is something that the council needs to consider and approve, then the process can be moved through the Planning Commission as a recommendation. So if it is the wish of the council to basically have the entire project before you, along with the lease, after the Planning Commission acts for it, on it, that can be accommodated.
Okay.
I have a comment.
Yes, Councilmember Bryant.
I feel comfortable going forward with the allowing them to process the application, because I believe it's going to be fully vetted,
because that was a very good point. We are giving up portion of a parking area, and also we might be putting a restriction on some type of development in there now based upon that particular location. So I think it would be important that there be an alternate site available.
Yeah, and I think that's I agree with that, and I think the city attorney has stated it correctly, that this authorizes them to just make application, but this does not approve any concept. So it could be a different location on city property, and so that's something that will be vetted through the process. Okay. So, city attorney, on this particular item, do we need a motion, or do you
think
that's sufficient?
I think staff is looking for consensus, and with regard to the other issue, I think staff would appreciate some direction as well with regard to whether you want to see this in its entirety or simply as a lease approval.
Okay, so two things. Is there consensus to allow this applicant to file, or to allow AT&T to file an application? That's the first part. Do we have consensus on that?
I say yes.
Yes, okay. And then the other part is the process. There is a provision that the council, if there is any component of a project that comes to the council, that it, and the entire project comes to the council with a recommendation from the commission.
I think that's
I was going to say no, but I wasn't asked. But there's three, so that's okay.
So I'd say yes to that.
Okay. Mayor Pro Tem, record that. Okay. All right. And staff, we appreciate the conservative approach. Okay, let's move on to item number 7. This is a status report on water resources.
Do we want Deborah to come back?
Yes. With someone.
Where is she?
She might be napping.
Is she?
We thought you had left.
I hope you got enough for everyone. Mr. Ray.
Honorable Mayor and City Council, tonight's item is a brief status report on water supply and demand in the city of Grover Beach. There's quite a bit of detail attached to your council staff report as attachments 1 and 2. Attachment 1 is basically a staff report that you've seen previously with updates written into it. And attachment 2 is a history of water supply and resource development in the city of Grover Beach. Quickly moving on to discussion, in regards to water demand in the city of Grover Beach, there has been a consistent trend toward a reduced per capita use of water. Since about 2008, we've seen a gradual decline in water use, and this would tend to lead us to believe that there will be sufficient water to serve the city at build-out. Basin-wide, there have been some concerns. Generally, we're part of the Santa Maria groundwater basin. Generally, there is no basin-wide water shortage. However, There has been indication that there has been overdraft in some specific areas within the basin, and these could have a negative effect on our water supply in the future. With regarding water quality, in 2009, we had a potential seawater intrusion incident measured within some of the monitoring wells near Oceano. Since that time, probably mostly due to pretty good rainfall, we have not had a recurrence of that event. So far, water quality has been great in the last 2 years. Recently, the cities of Grover Beach, Rio Grande, Pismo Beach together funded a feasibility study by Stetson Engineers to look at raising the spillway height at Lopez Dam. That study, a draft of that, was actually published today. I did not have a chance to read through it. The executive summary looked pretty good, though, that there may be some opportunities there to develop some inexpensive supplemental water supply for the city of Grover Beach as well as our neighboring communities. Looking at the emergency and permanent state water purchase, if council may recall, there was an effort during the recent drought to negotiate with the Central Coast Water Authority to trade pipeline capacity in the state water pipeline for actual water that we could then potentially store behind Lopez Dam. That effort is essentially stalled, again, mostly because of rainfall. The CCWA doesn't see that there's currently an emergency, and so the discussion is not on their front burner at this time. There has been surplus water stored behind Lopez Dam. We Habitat Conservation Plan. You probably recalled a fairly long and detailed discussion about the Habitat Conservation Plan. Basically, you know, boil it down to the bare essence of it. The Habitat Conservation Plan will allow Zone 3 to operate the dam in compliance with the Endangered Species Act. It has been more than a 10-year project. It hasn't moved very far. And the status right now is basically the county is trying to make a decision on what strategy to move forward with on the Habitat Conservation Plan. The next steps would include processing the environmental documents, preparing a final environmental impact statement, getting comments back on that statement, and then moving on to go ahead and process the Habitat Conservation Plan through the resource agencies. Recycled water, I thought I'd just hint on that. There hasn't been much movement in recycled water. A conclusion was made via a number of studies several years ago that it's not an affordable source of water, at least for domestic use within the city of Grover Beach. However, the most recent movement in terms of use of recycled water was that the Sand District did some a tour with some local farmers into the Northern California farming areas to show local farmers how Northern California farmers are using recycled water to irrigate crops similar to ours. And so that apparently was a pretty good meeting and field trip, and we probably be hearing more about that in the near future. That pretty much concludes my report. Basically, conclusion with some ongoing recommendations for council to consider, and that would be that we continue to continue annual groundwater monitoring. We continue to pursue reliable water source options as outlined within this report. That we continue additional engineering assistance as may be necessary to assist with Zone 3 related activities. That we continue to work cooperatively on a policy and staff level with the jurisdictions comprising the Northern Cities Management Area. And that we continue to work cooperatively with the Napomo Mesa Management Area, the county, and other Northern City Management Area jurisdictions to develop a groundwater model of the entire Northern City Management and Napomo Mesa Management Area. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Greg. Nice report. Let me see if there's any questions to my right. Councilmember Bryant?
To the fact that we needed to reduce our usage 20% by 2020, what I'm not remembering is if you know how far we have to go to actually achieve that. I think you'd said we're on target for that, or do we need to do further still?
The current trend would suggest that we're on target for that. However, it would be my opinion that we would have to step up our water conservation efforts, I think, to see that trend continue. We do see a gradual reduction in per capita use continuing. Seems to be that people are installing drought-tolerant landscaping and reducing in-home water consumption. But you know, at some point in time, as discussed in the attachment to report there, we'd have to see about a 50% reduction in irrigated landscapes within the city. So, you know, that would be pretty widespread to achieve that.
Okay, and then at our last meeting, we had someone stand up from the public and say that that they had conflicting data that would suggest that the water table under Nipomo is not sinking, is not getting lower, but in fact has picked up. Have you had any alternate feedback to what you've told us in the report? Because what you're telling us in the report is that historically and for quite a long period of time, the water under Nipomo has been decreasing.
I think I'll take the shortcut out on that one, and I'll tell you that their water experts, a number of PhDs who were hired by the Nipomo Mesa Management Area to study groundwater within that area, their experts concluded that there is an overdraft and that overdraft is causing a pumping depression below the Nipomo Mesa area.
Thank you. That's very helpful. And the programs that you mentioned that we've used, and they've been good programs and they've had good uptake, those are being funded by our water budget, not by our development agency. Is that right?
Most of the water conservation programs are being funded by water conservation development impact fees.
Okay. Thank you. And I have some comments, but I guess I'll wait till our discussion to make those.
Okay. Councilmember Mourner.
I have a question. The raising of the Lopez Spillway, is that going to have any conflict with the Habitat Conservation Plan?
No. It was on my email. So I'll be taking a look at it. The NCMA technical group is going to review that and make sure there's nothing too unusual in that, and then recommend that it be published to the agencies that funded that effort.
Okay. And then on the Habitat Conservation Plan, I know we said it's over $1 million and it's been in the works for over 10 years. So, and it looks like the group is having a debate over how to go forward with it, whether you take it as put together now and go into the environmental process or if there are changes made to the plan. Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
I can. And I was sorry, I went over that fairly quickly.
No, that's okay.
So basically where it stands, the county Zone 3 hired a consultant at the Zone 3 Technical Group and Advisory Committee's request to look at the HCP process and to determine if the 10 years worth of effort had produced a document that was going to sail through with flying colors. The consulting engineers looked at the document and said, hey, for nearly $1 million, we'll dress this thing up for you, and we'll give you a pretty solid confidence that it might go through pretty well. Obviously, rather than putting a bunch more money into it, there was another approach that was considered, and that was, well, how about we just submit it as is and let the resource agencies make the comments on what we need to change? That's where it is today, and the county Zone 3 is trying to come up with a third alternative. And the alternatives are so disparate. There's either spend a ton of money, completely revamp the document, send it to them, send it to the resource agencies, spend little or no money, send it as is, and take the risk that we get so many comments that they essentially either refuse to review it or they reject the document or we end up in a whole process of revamping it anyway. They're trying to develop some middle ground between those two recommendations, and they seem to be stumped at that point.
So then my follow-up question is there anything we can do to get them to move forward? Is it a letter? Do we need to start politicking? Because, you know, the world I live in the world I'm sure most of us, 10 years in the process, over $1 million in the process, you know, this is, they're on this never-ending treadmill. So how do we get this thing off the snide and get.
We requested the schedule to get to that point. We say, we're tired of being in the no man's land waiting for the schedule to begin. So we're asking them to develop a schedule to present it to us that would be forwarded to the advisory committee, which you have a representative on, and that schedule would indicate how we're moving forward. We've asked them to provide a budget, you know, just like a professional consultant would do at this point. We're saying we're tired of the approach that we've seen so far, and we'd like to see a more of a professional consultant approach. Scope, yeah. Budget, you know, schedule, details. Tell us how this thing's going to move and give us an opportunity to make decisions to move it forward.
Okay. Well, let us know if there's something that we need to do, because I think it's time. And for folks who aren't familiar with the Habitat Conservation Plan and really what that really means to us regarding water supply, can you maybe talk about that a little bit?
Well, so there was a lawsuit regarding the operation of Lopez Dam. The lawsuit has brought the operation of the dam into question with regard to endangered species, in particular steelhead trout. In order to move ahead into the future, we would need an upgraded permit or a revised permit to operate the dam, as well as a take permit for incidental take of endangered species. In order to get those two, we would have to have a habitat conservation plan in place. And the habitat conservation plan is an enormous research document, essentially, that essentially says how we're going to operate releases from the dam such that we protect the habitat below the dam. Also, some habitat above the dam has come into question in conjunction with this. So.
Okay. And then finally, water reclamation, and we've heard Surf Riders talk about this, and I think, I know Councilmember Peterson has talked about this, and in the report, it looks like you were talking about it still appears to be prohibitive on doing it, whether it's at South County Sand or at Pismo Beach's new wastewater facility. I think something to the tune of, what, about $5,000 per acre foot? Can you maybe, either if not tonight, in a subsequent meeting, let us know what was the basis of arriving at that number? Did it only include, you know, the three communities that deal with South Sand? Did it include everyone in Five Cities area? I'm just curious about that number.
My understanding, then they looked at, from those potential uses, what would be the supply system required to get it there, the piping, valving, how many miles of piping, et cetera, would that take, and the cost of that. They also looked at the required level of treatment and the expansion of the treatment plant to provide water that could be used for turf irrigation, and that's how they came up with the number. They assumed if all those various facilities chose to use the water, the cost would be about that much per acre foot. Gotcha. The farming option, however, is much closer. That option is one that has to be considered by the farmers and approved, would have to be approved by them before you'd move forward.
Gotcha. Great. Thanks for that information. It's always good for folks in the audience and at home to have that background information. So let's see where we are. Okay. So those are our questions. This is a business item. I still see we have some folks in the audience, so let me see if anyone would like to speak on this item tonight. Okay, seeing none, I'm going to close it, bring it back to the council. And this is just a file and receive, but I think Councilmember Peterson had some comments she wanted to make. So let me get you have the floor.
I had a couple of things that have been things that actually have been interested in pursuing for the 3 years that I've been on the council. One thing is gray water, and when I came on the council, gray water, there were no gray water ordinances in the county, but the county now has developed gray water, so they would be a good model for us. And I would really like to see us consider that as one of our next steps in helping our water table and conserving water. And I know that at this stage it's illegal to use gray water. Is it not in our city?
Mayor, if I may?
Yes.
I anticipated your question or comment, and I did a little bit of research today to look into gray water use in the city of Grover Beach. So the California Plumbing Code, which the city of Grover Beach adopted as its building code, or as its plumbing code, part of the building code, allows for gray water use. Uh-huh. There are systems and regulations inside of the California Plumbing Code that would show how you could do that. So a person could theoretically propose a gray water program, and our building department would inspect and review that. We haven't had much interest in it, from what I could see. And I believe the primary reason is the cost and the maintenance. I'm not a building department inspector, and I don't get heavily involved in that area of the industry, but I know there are a lot of concerns, particularly with health issues. If the city were to adopt the California Green Building Code, there are provisions in there that would allow us to require similar type installations, gray water being one of them, but other green installations also. The question you have to ask, of course, would be, what would that do to development incentives within the city of Grover Beach? Would it cause people to shy away or potentially dampen folks from developing or redeveloping? So,
thank you. And I suspect that, and maybe the plumbing code has changed, but certainly the last time I asked anyone official, the information I received was that it's illegal in Grover Beach. And so if the rest of the population's received that same information, then that might also be why it's less prevalent. And I wouldn't like to see us require anything more in this economic climate that would cost money, but I sure would like to see us encourage a few things like rainwater recapture, use of gray water, and I'd really like to see us encourage native species, especially when we're going to be working with state parks on a conference center, which will have an ecological side to it. I don't want to dictate to people who have fabulous gardens that they have to have native species, but I would certainly like to be able to encourage that, and I think all of those things would be things that would improve the city but also improve our water situation and compliance.
Mayor Schultz, if I may?
Yes.
Just a couple more comments. Those are great ideas, and I think staff definitely has been supportive of that. The city has a really great water or drought tolerant landscaping ordinance. It does include use of native species. There's a number of species identified. The native species have been highlighted within that, and there's information available here for developers and homeowners to pursue. Also, we do have handouts from San Luis Obispo County on the use of gray water that we keep there to try to encourage people to consider those options. And we have handouts on the use of rainwater collection devices for yard landscape or yard watering and small rain gardens. So staff has made some efforts, partly on behalf of council suggestions, that we have information out there for the public and for developers to pursue these options.
Thank you, Greg. Councilmember Munar.
I know we had the Cash for Grass program. What other water saving programs do we have or incentives just that come from the city?
Changes out toilets. I think that program is actually maxed for this fiscal year. But we do have a plumbing retrofit program that changes out high water use toilets with low flush toilets. And I'm probably missing one, but I think that those are the ones that come to
irrigation.
Mind.
Do you have a drip irrigation?
Yeah. And yeah. I might add, Mayor, that those incentives are on the website if people want to look for that. Yeah.
All right.
Great.
Thank you.
Very good. Okay. This is a receive and file. I know that as the studies come out, we're going to have more discussion on water. In particular, it's very troubling, the HCP in Zone 3, and I know we've talked about trying to gain a larger role as opposed to advisory. And so we're going to continue to pursue that, and then obviously the issue of long-term water, and then others. So we'll have subsequent meetings on this topic. So, thank you, Greg. Really good information. So at this point, what I'm going to do is it's almost 8:00. I'm going to recess the regular meeting of the City Council, and I'm going to call to order a joint City Council Improvement Agency meeting for Monday, October 17, 2011. I know that there are several folks who are here for one of the items, so I'm going to do that at this point. So, Donna, I'm going to call to order. Roll call.
Here.
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 Here. Here. Great. Thank you, Donna. Public communications. Does anyone want to address the Joint City Council Improvement Agency under public communications tonight? Okay, seeing no one coming forward, I'm going to close public communications. And let's go into the Joint City Council Improvement Agency business. This is item CCIA1, and this is amendments to the agreement with the Grover Beach Chamber of Commerce. And City Manager Chief Copsey.
Thank you, Mayor, and I'm going to defer this to Parks and Recreation Director Kathy Petker.
Very good.
Honorable Mayor and Council Members, Kathy Petker. I'm having the honor to provide you this report. I am the City Liaison for the Chamber of Commerce, so I'm a little familiar with this. As you know, the City has been in agreement with the Chamber of Commerce since 2008. To fund their business promotions and city benefit the businesses. And this agreement is focusing on the emphasis of providing economic development services. And provided for you in your attachments is the amended agreement as well as a copy of the previous agreement. As a result of the meeting, the highlights of the new agreement include the elimination of the funding for two special events. However, the Chamber of Commerce has stated they would continue conducting the Stone Soup Music Fair with non-city funds. Also, the Chamber would, if they choose in the future to conduct additional events beyond the Stone Soup Fair, they would find other sources other than city funds to conduct those. The new agreement also states that the visitor center will be operated in such a way as to serve city businesses that are both inside and outside of the improvement agencies, and that they will take on a number of additional activities to improve their economic development services, and those are outlined in the new agreement of what activities they plan on doing to reach out to more businesses and drive more economic development. In summary of payments, the compensation amount is unchanged. It would still be $40,000 on an annual basis, and the $25,000 would still come from the agency's project fund, and the $15,000 would continue to come from the general fund. The highlight in the new agreement is the payment. Payment section would highlight that at least 65% of the services rendered to this agreement would have to fall within area agencies 1 and 2. And from staff's research, we've learned that 80% of our businesses in Grover Beach fall within that area. And just as a reminder, that the City Council, that there is a lawsuit pending before the Supreme Court regarding the future of the redevelopment agencies in the state of California, and until that court case is decided, that they have stated that no new agreements can be made. However, since this is an existing agreement, it may be amended. And there are alternatives for the City Council to consider. Adopt the resolution approving the amended agreement between the City and the Chamber.
Was going to include that there would be a city representative on the board of the Chamber, and I had thought that we had talked about possibly getting more than just one report a year, and it looks like this is just one report a year. And what was the other one? Those are the two big ones I'm thinking of right now. So yes. I was a little concerned about not seeing those things here. I think I'm really, really pleased with what's going on in terms of doing it with much more emphasis on economic development, but I did want to make sure that we considered whether those two were things that we felt we needed to have.
Okay. Councilmember Bonar.
Actually, those were the two items I was going to bring up also. And then when it comes to business marketing, are we talking about making efforts of going beyond the city, bringing new businesses in? Is that part of the Chamber's responsibility?
Okay. So I'm going to capture these because we've got several representatives from the Chamber here, and we'll bring them up, and they can answer questions. Okay? Questions, am I right? Councilmember Wright.
I'm a little unsure about how an invoice is going to reflect the 65% of the services rendered as a result of the agreement that's going to benefit the businesses within the project area. So I'd like someone to just kind of give me an idea how that would, how they do that.
Okay. So who wants to try that one?
Actually, I believe Administrative Services Director Chapman is perhaps available.
Mr. Mayor, I can try and answer that briefly, would be Administrative Services. But my understanding is that they've been provided with the areas that are supposed to be part of that. And so they know, the Chamber knows, and they might be able to answer that. The Chamber will know what areas that they need to serve, and that invoice should reflect those areas that they have served.
Okay. Do you have anything else?
No, that was it. Thank
you. Okay. Oh, there she is. Okay. I don't have any questions at this time. Let me open this up to the public, and let's start with representatives from the Chamber of Commerce first, and then I'll allow members of the public to come forward and comment.
Good evening. My name is Michael Boyer. We would gladly have a council member as be a member of our board of directors. As with any member of our Chamber of Commerce, you have the capability of nominating and becoming a member of our Chamber of the Chamber of Commerce.
Okay, and then that would probably contribute to the annual reporting because we would have someone doing regular reports.
Exactly. Okay. And then what we had discussed with if we have a council member on our board of directors, then they have a vote on the board, and they have 100%. They can come back to the council and provide a report at every council meeting if necessary.
Very good. Mm-hmm. And then I think Councilmember Monar asked a question regarding economic development and the, are you thinking recruitment of businesses beyond the city limits? Is that?
Yeah.
Like, did I capture that correctly?
Well, here's a for example, and I was mentioning this to the city manager when I had a meeting with them recently, is in Santa Barbara, I know currently there's a company called Chick-fil-A, which is actually starting to move into a lot into California, and I just wondered how you go about approaching a company like that and saying, we do have some spaces available, such as the old IHOP, or over there where the Chinese place went out, that you could approach a company and say, would you consider coming and taking a look at us? So I didn't know whose responsibility or whose job it was to do that, and if that was something that the Chamber does.
Okay. My first response would be that would be the city manager's and maybe Mr. Buckingham's job to do that.
Okay.
And I think, you know, fundamentally the contract's a little different with our relationship with the Chamber now, where they will focus on obviously meeting with existing businesses, and there's several things let out in the contract. But it's a really good question, and I think that lends itself to even beyond this, talk about our economic strategy and identifying this, because I can give you a perfect example, and I'll do that. But let me see if anyone else has a question of Mr. Boyer while he's up. Okay.
Thank you.
So the perfect example is I can tell you probably within the first or second year I was on this council, the council was approached by a group, and I believe the group was Buxton.
Yes. They're still in business.
They're still Match 4 area, Applebee's.
They're here.
You see where that is?
Yeah.
Chili's.
Yes.
You see where they are?
Yes.
And third one escapes me. Now, that said, the city of Rio Grande, as I understand it, were very aggressive in taking that information and approaching them. And so we do need to find a better way to do that.
Okay.
So,
yes.
So it's a very good question. The one thing I do want to do is we get all this information, but folks who are either in the audience or who are at home don't necessarily have the benefit of a staff report. So, Kathy, if you can go to page 2, I just want to highlight, I think we're going to get better value from the Chamber. Yeah, that's fine. I think so. I think we are moving forward under the constraints of this struggling economy, under the constraints of a governor and a legislature that has saw fit to try and eliminate redevelopment. And so trying to fundamentally change the way we do business and certainly utilizing the chamber as an asset, I think this contract allows us to do that. And so eliminating the city's contribution toward two community events that the chamber has said they will continue to do, Stone Soup and the other, and if the city chooses to be a sponsor, we can do that. But this allows us to utilize the chamber's resources in addition to our own resources and really try and make an impact when it comes to economic development. And so I wanted to just highlight this section in the new contract really, really quickly. Okay. That looks great. So maybe you could just hit the numbered items. You don't necessarily have to hit the letter items, Kathy. So starting at the top, we'll now have monthly business-oriented email newsletter and monthly video information distributed to current membership as well as businesses throughout the county and surrounding counties. And then the second one is the creation of marketing material for economic development, in which the chamber is going to work with the city to create, looks like, 5 one-sheet flyers and a branded folder to mail out to prospects. So we're going to get a lot more value for our buck, and really hopefully this will give us a great boost on our economic agreement that's before us.
Mayor, if I may.
Yes.
Thank you, Honorable Mayor, Chair, and Council members and board members. A couple of things that I wanted to highlight for you with regard to the actual agreement. First of all, the agreement will, and its final draft will be an amendment to the existing agreement. It will not be a new agreement. The draft is somewhat misleading in that regard.
Okay.
It will also refer to the, it will be called an amendment, and it will refer to the original agreement. Again, the agency is not in a position to enter into any new agreements at this time. With regard to membership on the board, if it is the council's or the board's desire to have someone be a member, I would just remind you that appointment to a body on a continuous basis, not an ad hoc committee, would make that body a Brown Act body. So if one of you sits as a voting board member on the chamber board, those meetings are now Brown Act meetings.
So for our chamber reps, tell them what that means. What have you won?
A strict FPPC review.
So meetings are published and they're available for the public to attend.
They have to file in the Brown Act. It has to be, meaning it has to be published 72 hours before it takes place in 3 different places. You cannot act on anything that is not on the agenda. All of the rules and regulations that are applicable to governmental agencies would be applicable to those meetings.
Okay.
Membership without voting privileges would probably, not probably, would avoid that.
Okay. So to be discussed in further detail later. Phyllis, did you have something? I saw you lean forward.
No. So membership without voting privileges, that would just be, you would be...
We would just, you'd just be there observing without voting, right? So I think that's something that we will need to have.
You already have a liaison, that's right.
Although I don't believe this contract states that we will have a liaison.
It's an amendment, remember?
Yeah.
Oh, it's an amendment, it's so amendment. The other one's still in place?
Well, what we would attempt to do is obviously incorporate the terms that are not inconsistent, and some of these terms are different from the other, so that's where your input would come in.
So I would just say, let's not reject the notion out of hand. I think if we can move forward with the agreement, and then I think the last thing I wanted to just kind of bring up is just a matter of form. Previously, the mayor signed the agreement, and this amendment, it has a space for the city manager to sign, and I think we should be consistent and have the mayor sign the agreement if it is the pleasure of this council to move forward with what is presented to us this evening.
Could I raise, I just have one more concern. If originally we had stated that there, the city manager would represent or designate a representative who would act as chamber liaison and program manager for this agreement, I think more than ever we need a program manager for this agreement. We need someone who's going to be proactive with the chamber in working with them on the business development. And from what I'm hearing, that's not actually now a part of this agreement. That was our service agreement, attachment 4, but attachment 3 does not call that out.
Then it was an addendum.
So then I would just suggest that why don't you make a motion, and then we can amend either the amendment to the agreement or the original agreement to basically, and quite honestly, maybe it's the city council shall represent or designate a representative.
I think, first of all, if it's your desire, I mean, you can simply, the terms that are, treat the new draft as an amendment, and those terms that are not inconsistent with that amendment will remain in full force and effect from the old agreement. And there is a difference between a liaison or program manager representative and a board member or a voting board member. So those two concepts are very different.
So I think, but at the end of the day, what I'm hearing is that the council wants to be able to select that representative, whether it's a liaison or whether it's a program manager or whatever form it takes. And so I think that's something we want to make sure that's part of this amendment or modifies the original agreement.
Yeah. That's an internal issue, not an issue in the contract between us and the chamber. How that program manager is selected by the city is up to the council. But the contract provides that there will be one between the city and the chamber. At least currently it does.
I understand, but if you're saying this is an amendment to the original agreement under number one, management says that the city manager. So now that that's clear as mud.
Okay.
So what is before us is there's a couple of recommendations is that the city council adopt a resolution authorizing non-financial amendments to the agreement with the chamber, and then looks like a separate resolution for the improvement agency. So is someone prepared to make a motion? And I think we had talked about, or maybe staff feels like there's adequate direction to revise that one item.
I can make a motion that we adopt the attachment 2, the amendment. Oh, no, those are actually, that's not the resolutions that we have before us.
So basically, take the first resolution, which is attachment 1.
Okay, so I would say that we approve an amended agreement with the Grover Beach Chamber of Commerce, and that basically it will incorporate the any of the previous contractual arrangements unless they conflict, and specifically that the council will designate the representative to the chamber as opposed to the city manager designating the representative.
Good motion.
I'll second that.
Okay, there's a motion and a second. Any additional discussion on that? Roll call. This is for the city council.
Councilwoman Peterson.
Yes.
Councilwoman Wright.
Yes.
Councilwoman Baldwin.
Yes.
Mayor Protem.
Yes.
And Mayor Phillips.
Yes. And then the resolution for the improvement agency.
Which I'm happy to make that one too. It's basically the same resolution for the improvement agency.
And I'll second that.
Okay. There's a motion and a second. If there's no discussion on the motion, roll call.
Yes.
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 Vice Chair Nichols?
Yes.
And Chair Schultz?
Yes. Great. And I think with that, the Joint City Council Improvement Agency meeting is adjourned. And I'm going to reconvene the regular City Council meeting, and then we will take a 10-minute break. So let's reconvene at 8:33. water resources. So we're going to move on this agenda. We did not have any pooled consent items tonight. And then council committee reports. Let's see. How about council member Bright?
Thank you. Yes, I did attend a air pollution control district meeting. I'm at the end of September, actually September 28th. And as many of you know that that attended the meeting hosted by the state parks, we had a lengthy public comment, and the board provided direction regarding concepts for coastal dune dust control requirements, also known as a dust rule. At this time, the dust rule basically directs a coastal dune vehicle activity area to maintain two PM10 monitors, one at a prescribed control site, which is directly downwind from the vehicle activity area where vehicle activity has been prohibited. So, and then the other at the vehicle activity area itself. If the 24-hour average PM10 count at the vehicle activity area is more than 10 micrograms per cubic meter of air above the 24-hour PM10 count at the control site, and the average PM10 count at the vehicle activity area exceeds the state standard of 55 micrograms per cubic meter, a violation is considered to have occurred. And I tried to do this in a real layman's type of language, so people might have some kind of idea of what is being proposed. So that's basically at the vehicle activity area. Then a coastal dune vehicle activity areas will also be required to have a track out prevention program, which that would not allow track out sand or soil that adheres to the exterior surfaces of vehicles, equipments, tires that may fall onto any street. And this is to extend 25 feet or more onto paved public roads. And that track out should be removed from the pavement in an approved method and schedule. The staff also reported on results of the pilot projects that the Desert Research Institute conducted at the dunes, and they indicated they were effective at reducing sand movement responsible for generating dust emissions at the dunes by over 90%. Copies to hand out, but you're more than welcome to. If you want a copy, I can certainly get one for you.
The fugitive okay. dust rule is uh-huh. what it's called?
Well, that's okay. It's called Coastal Dune Dust Control Requirements, but I guess throughout the industry it's known as fugitive dust. So,
and is this a given thing? I mean, are we... is this still open to discussion?
Well, it's just a draft, so that's all that we've heard now. So they will come back for a final rule with some modifications that the board had discussed.
So there'll be a vote on the 16th.
Yes, right. There will be a vote on the 16th. Mm-hmm.
Okay, and the public is invited, and
oh, absolutely,
can come
public
and,
is
and
public
they can question the scientific findings for this particular rule.
Sure, they've been questioned from the get go, on both okay. sides.
All right, thank you.
Welcome.
Can you? Do you know specifically where you said that there are two monitors of the air quality, and one of them is in the riding area?
Yes.
Where is the other one located?
It's directly downwind.
At the CDF.
So, this is the control site. Mm-hmm. Is directly downwind from the vehicle activity area, and that's going to be placed where there is no vehicle activity. So,
is it there already, or is it
no.
still going to be placed?
Yes, that
okay.
is.
Okay.
That's the rule directs that.
Okay.
So they can measure if, in fact, there is sand movement at an area where there is no vehicle activity, mm-hmm. As opposed to where there is vehicle activity. So it'll be downwind from that.
Okay.
Okay. I'm just wondering, is there any interest in having, so you don't have to do this all tonight, is there any interest in having this placed on November 7th agenda?
Indeed. In fact, I think we need to have, I was on that tour of the dunes, and I know that there are several, there's the the California Geological Survey gentleman who would be quite willing to speak in regards to this, and other members of the state that have other information. And so I believe we really should ask some of them to come and give us a presentation on their side of the issue.
I think that's a good idea. Mm-hmm. But I think also you should have the APCD here as well, so you hear the whole concept, okay, both sides of the issue.
Then based upon my past experience with having two sides come in, I hope both sides will be given equal opportunity.
They and our Mayor Pro Tem Nichols were all at that tour, and it was really useful to me to be at that tour, and I'll bring it up now because it's relevant,
yeah,
to what,
absolutely,
we're talking about. You know, I had spoken with two, one approached me, the other one I asked, with two folks, two old-timers, basically, who'd been riding the dunes for years, and one of them explained to me that 30 years ago, 40 years ago, there was access, it wasn't all state parks land, but there was access to 25,000 acres of dunes to ride in, and now they have 1,500, so they have less than 10% of what they had been doing for 25 years. And then when we went out there, it was really quite incredible to see what a good job state parks does of managing the very interests, mm-hmm, of the varying interests of the conservationists, the steelhead trout. They got to watch out that the trout can get,
right,
into the ocean. They have to manage the ATVs crossing the trout stream,
mm-hmm,
and they have to manage and also provide safety training on this 1,500 acres. And they were able to show us the 1,500 acres that are being ridden on that are, for the most part, just sand sheets. But then immediately adjacent to them, right next door, are another 1,500 acres that are not being ridden on. And there were a lot of questions raised about some of the science, and so I think I would very much support hearing from state parks. And I was just so impressed. They manage a huge area. It's bigger than any of the cities locally,
mm-hmm,
I think. And, you know, a huge amount of staff and a huge amount of interest, and they do it graciously, safely. And I just would really like to hear from state parks on this, too.
I think it's a good idea. Absolutely.
Okay.
As I said, you can't in one mm-hmm session get the whole idea. And I agree, they have managed that park, mm-hmm, very successfully.
Mm-hmm.
There's no question about that.
Okay. So I think we've got consensus to do that. So I will work with the city manager. Police Chief.
I just wanted to make sure that I'm not so sure we can get both people on the 7th.
You can't get
actually,
APCD there,
you know,
I can tell you
until
that.
We can converse with them and talk to them and schedule a time. I don't know if I would commit that to the 7th until the city manager can do that.
Well, I understood. I would just say to contact them, and the reason I suggest the 7th is it's obviously in advance of the 16th, so we'd like to hear information, and if we will want to work with our representative on that commission or that board. So that's why this, I think that's so we do want there to be some decision making at that meeting.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, an action item or as a business item is probably better.
Mayor?
Yes.
Is there some way that we can couch their presentation into some sort of a simplified process as Councilmember Bright, mm-hmm, just mentioned? She's been on the APCD for 2.5 years, and it's extremely difficult to comprehend and understand. And there was so much discussion during that tour as to what is happening and what tests have been done and the results of the test, and it's all over the board completely. And it just... I'm just concerned about having these presentations come in here to us and in a very brief presentation, 10 or 15 minutes or whatever you're going to give them, what can we really learn in that period of time when we have a council member that's been going to meetings for 2.5 years and still has a problem trying to comprehend exactly what's going on. I don't want to waste everybody's time. I do think it's a very important subject. I'm just a little bit concerned about them coming in, making a presentation that might go right over our head and not be all that beneficial. That's what I'm concerned
mm-hmm
about.
Well, like I said, I'll work with the city manager, and we will work with them because
bottom line is that they are trained professionals and they should be able to distill it down to a point that we can at least get a significant amount of understanding and information. So the benefit is not just to us, but it's to folks who are watching. So I think, yeah, are people going to get a full 100% comprehension in one sitting? Maybe not.
No.
But there's certainly, there's always value in providing information, always.
Yeah.
So.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. Karen, did you have anything else?
No, I do the basin-wide air pollution meeting on Wednesday in Santa Barbara. So
okay.
That's it.
Very good. Councilmember Moner.
No, actually, I had to cancel going to the Housing Trust so I could go on the Dunes tour. And
what?
It was much longer than I thought it would be.
I know. It was, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. And
Foundation. And Community Foundation has given them some money to the Five-City Homeless Coalition has been selected as the agency that will work on trying to develop a site, a facility, personnel, etc., that will continue to work. But that particular organization, the task team, was put together to study the whole thing and make recommendations to the foundation. That was completed and done with. So it does not meet anymore. It doesn't exist anymore. It's out of business. On the 10-year plan to end chronic homelessness, they have not had a meeting lately. I have not been to one. They canceled their summer meetings. On the Water Resources Advisory Committee, they continue to work on the Paso Robles groundwater basin study. It takes up about 90% of the time. There are presentations being made trying to get the program ready to go to the Board of Supervisors. It probably will go to the Board of Supervisors in October. They're also continuing to work on the master water plan for the whole county, and they expect a draft of that to be ready in November.
And that's the RAC?
Yes.
For the entire county?
Pardon?
I'm sorry. Yeah.
Water Resources Advisory Committee.
For the entire county?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
On the Sanitation District, I would like to comment that the Surfrider representative that was here made the statement that that we have been over on our BOD testing results over the limit all summer long. That is absolutely incorrect and false. We were over in August and September. We are trying to find out what is happening. We had the same problem last summer. We thought we got it nailed down with an organization. You've probably all seen the bright green vehicles called Yo Banana Boy. Mm-hmm. That runs around on the beach. Well, a year ago when we started having the same similar problem with the high BODs, we checked and found out that Yo Banana Boy had come to the sanitation district, got authorization to operate on the beach. They drain the same problem now with the high BOD testing. We have switched him over to Pismo Beach. He now dumps at the North Campground. Pismo Beach has a newer facility. They're a little bit more sophisticated in their processing, and we felt that we would try that, and they agreed with us to see if this has a significant effect on their testing. If all of a sudden with Yo Banana Boy pumping into their system, if it in fact makes a difference in their test results, if it all of a sudden shoots up high, then we'll have some idea of where this is coming from. We don't know what is being dumped into the system. Haven't been able to make that decision yet. We have also put in some newer, we're in the process of putting in some new meters into our trunk systems. We have three specific trunk systems. One comes from Rio Grande, one from Grover Beach, and one from Oceano. And we are testing each one of them to see if we can find out where the high concentration is coming from. And if once we find out which trunk system it's in, we'll back up the meters until we find out exactly where it's coming from. So we're in the process of trying to find that out. It's a long process. It's something can't be done overnight. Insofar as changing the testing laboratories, we were getting results from, what was the name of the company?
Abalone.
Pardon?
Abalone.
Yes, Abalone. Their scores, their test results were very, very high. We went to another lab and had them run the same samples, commencing with a new date, and their test results were very low. We were getting from one lab probably test results up in the 60s and 70s. Our maximum is 40. The other lab was giving us test results in the low 20s. So we don't know what is going on. The state, we have talked to the state about this. The state has recommended, they have a lab that operates out of Bakersfield. It's a very good lab that they thought it might be worthwhile to give them a try. We are using them. We have quit using the one lab so that we can, and the state has recommended and advised us that what we are to do is to continue to use two labs and then use the average results of the BOD testing to see where we stand. So it's been a constant problem. We're aware of it. We're working on it. It's the sort of thing that you have to find out what is the source. So that was just completed. In fact, that was completed this morning. We had that meeting, so the final report will be out very shortly, and we'll all get a copy of that.
Okay, very good.
Actually, I'd like to thank you for that. That's a detailed report. We appreciate it.
Okay. I agree. And can I ask a question?
Sure.
So now you have two different testing agencies, one in Bakersfield and one somewhere else. What are the BODs now? Are they more similar instead of being so disparaging?
As of this month, the BOD is down. We're down below 40. We're still getting different results from two different labs.
But not so different.
Correct. I have talked to the district administrator. I have suggested to him these labs are licensed by the state health department. And I have suggested that we might want to submit a letter to the state health department and ask them if they are aware of this discrepancy. I mean, they set up these labs, they test them, they monitor the labs, and we submit two samples from the same batch to two different labs, and we get these vastly different results.
Mm. Sounds funky.
Why? What is one lab doing that the other lab's not doing? Is it the lab problem? Is it our problem?
Yeah.
Who knows? Yeah. So, but we also have to be a little bit careful. You don't want to go to one of these labs and make accusations and get in trouble in that respect. So it's something we're working with right now, trying to put together a letter that will go to the state health department to ask their assistance on a problem that we seem to be aware of, not sure they are, would like them to be aware of it, see what they recommend.
That makes sense.
I wanted to thank Council Member Mayor Pro Tem Nichols also for the work that you did on the Clap Road Initiative Task Team and the 10-year plan to end chronic homelessness. I know you've worked on it for many years, and appreciate all of that.
Thank you.
That it?
That's it.
Council Member Peterson.
The Economic Vitality Corporation hasn't met yet this month, and the SLO Visitors and Conference Bureau, Kathy Petker, did a great report on that, so we don't have a lot to say there. We will be meeting on Wednesday in a couple of days, and so next meeting I will have a report on the Savor the Central Coast event.
Okay, very good.
I do have a question. When Kathy was given her presentation... Okay, I was kind of curious as to how it compared to 2 years.
I'm very curious. I'm mostly curious as to whether they broke even this year, but I don't know yet.
Yeah. The $300,000 question, huh?
Indeed.
Okay. So let me go through a few reports for you. The San Luis Obispo Council of Governments is set to meet on, I believe, November the... get that date right. November 2nd. What I had staff do is make a copy of an email from Rhonda Carley, the executive director, back in April, so that we all had a chance. And Did everyone get a copy of this, or did they give me multiple copies?
No.
No. Two for you.
Thank you.
So this is just a general summary of the SLOCOG meeting and how it could affect our city from a standpoint of programming and funding. In the fiscal year 10-11, Prop 1B Transit Funds, which is subject to the state's release of bonding, the Grover Beach Train Station expansion was programmed for $1 million for that project. And that's the project where we've been trying to address the issue of this bifurcated station where we got mm-hmm. train on one side of the tracks and buses dropping off on the other side. And so, as I understand, the design concept is complete. We would be looking at adding additional parking because I know parking down there is very important. As I understand it, the environmental review is complete and was distributed to the Coastal Commission, and the Coastal Commission did not submit any comments. So we have gotten through the Coastal Commission permitting process. So the next step is to find funding to do the engineering. And I know we had set aside about $75,000 in funding, but SLOCOG is also looking at trying to find funds to help get projects in the queue so that we can be more competitive as a region. So things are looking very positive in respect to that. The SCAT buses were also programmed for $1.3 million to start trying to replace some of the buses. And every time we've raised the issue of can we get an additional bus and try and figure out how do we serve some of the gaps in service in Grover Beach, more specifically North Grover, not utilizing the conventional method of taking these large buses up there, but maybe something that's more demand or something that's smaller or something that goes at set hours like when school is getting in, or cutting the funding that came from general fund towards streets from 240 down to 120. But there is, under the local transportation fund, Grover Beach is program $445,000 for fiscal year 11 and 12. So there are funds to do some street repair and some street maintenance. So I'll let you kind of read through the rest of this, but those are the ones that I really wanted to highlight for you. With respect to SLOCOG, there is, in fact, a new call for projects that are coming up. And I've talked to the city manager, and I know that we'll be talking about our CIP capital improvement program at a subsequent meeting, but looking at maybe a couple of projects, getting additional funding on West Grand Avenue under the Transportation Enhancement Funds, which is a federal program, which is typically where we're going to be more competitive because we don't have major highways running through our city. And so that's typically the pot of money where we are most successful at. So trying to find additional dollars to do additional enhancements on West Grand Avenue. We are going to be focusing on downtown right now, but then we do want to maybe go back to the West End of Grand and looking to see if we can extend that project one block east up to 5th, and then maybe doing something from 2nd down to the beach as we move forward with greater improvements down there. We're trying to identify funding ahead of time. The second one is that we had talked about possibly looking at a bike trail or extending the boardwalk from Grand South to Pier Avenue, and I think it's probably time to start getting that at least in the queue or putting that out there so that Rhonda Carley and his staff can start assisting us in trying to identify funding for the planning and hopefully ultimately for construction. Now, one that I had not brought up before, and I think at a subsequent meeting we'll want to talk about, is Oak Park Boulevard. Oak Park, when that street got widened, was actually submitted as a regional project because it runs through three jurisdictions, the city of Grover Beach, the city of Rio Grande, and Oceano. And so it's, I think if you've driven Oak Park lately, you're starting to see deterioration on it. So I'm going to advocate to SLOCOG that we need to start looking at that, and I think that just means that we're going to have to, as a body, put forward a project and try and get agreement with the city of Rio Grande and the county so that we can at least get it in the queue for funding.
And on the east side, it actually run east of 4th.
How they run in the South Canyon in our city. So I'll let you know what comes of that and if there are any critical votes coming up shortly thereafter. Moving on to the Five Cities Fire Authority, I had given you a report previously. The next meeting is scheduled for October 28th. And what we expect, at what will happen at that meeting is, I believe the staff working with the consultant from Terrain will come back and give a final report on the polling that had been done to see if there was interest in the community that would support generating revenues to support the formation of a special district, sort of a fire protection district. So the initial reaction that was given was very favorable, was very positive, and so they felt, given that, let's talk about what are the next steps. So they're going to come back to us and have the final report on that, as well as outlining next steps. And so once I have that in hand, we'll bring that to the council, and we'll have a full discussion on where we think we should go with this, whether it's something we can support or whether it's something that the time is not right. But we'll have that presentation. Okay. And then finally, the Beachfront Lodge continues to make progress. And there was a JA meeting about 3 weeks ago. The project has been somewhat revised in light of the economy and some other concerns with respect to prevailing wage and the project budget. So we're hoping that this meeting, there's a meeting October 25th in Sacramento. I believe myself, the city manager, and the city attorney, and I believe Bruce will be attending that. And it's really to get a final decision from the JA on this concept that's being presented. And so depending on what comes out of that, I'll bring a copy of that before this board and keep you fully informed. Okay. So that's all I had. We have no city council member items. Any council communications tonight?
I had a couple.
Okay. Yes, I don't have the postcard in front of me, but I'm sure you're aware they're going to have a neighborhood watch meeting having to do with, what was it, 14th Street?
Thank you.
Was that a good reminder?
That's good, yes.
But I'm not aware that I don't have the card to give the proper time and everything. I don't know.
I think it's on the 13th, on Thursday, but I don't know.
It is Thursday.
It is Thursday. Time. So this is at least one huge step in the right direction. And so from this small meeting, we've grown the meeting. And so I believe invitations have gone out to a larger neighborhood area. And the meeting is at Ramona this Thursday. And I believe it is...
I think I had it at 6 o'clock.
So may I ask a question about this?
Yes.
I guess to the city attorney, if three or more of us show up, what's going to happen?
Because I'm in that neighborhood. I know Karen is in the neighborhood.
And John's running the meeting, so there'll be three of us.
Well, maybe one of you may need to run the meeting.
And the meeting is on Thursday?
Yes.
Yes.
I would recommend that the meeting is noticed and posted as a potential council meeting. I don't know how else to...
just because we're residents there.
I mean, if you're planning on being there and participating and providing input and discussing what what potentially can occur, then out of abundance of caution, I think it would be advisable to post it as a workshop. There's a potential. There's language that Donna uses that says that there's a potential for the presence of a majority or a quorum of a governing body, and this may be a meeting.
And that's fine.
Yeah.
So let's just make sure.
You shouldn't change anything about it, but basically just notice it in that manner.
Yeah. So let's just make sure the meeting is posted and noticed. And thank you for reminding me, and thanks for that, Mark.
And it is scheduled for 6 o'clock.
Yes. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you.
Okay.
I had a couple of things, and I always am confused about whether they're city council member items or council communications.
We'll figure it out. Go ahead.
Okay, you can tell me, and maybe I'll get it right next time. One was that we, and this is just raising this, but at one time we talked about perhaps doing a parking, what do we call them, a parking seminar, a parking... Mm. Workshop, that's what it is.
Oh, and to deal with the one block that doesn't have 2 hours?
Well, that's one of, there are a whole lot of parking issues involved with our zoning and things that we should need to address at some point. So, yes. But the thing I raised last week got sorted out, so thank you to whoever put up. Well, okay. One was the property owner and one was the city. The signs down at Beach should be increased, reduced, how it should be addressed in certain situations.
So well, it should be uniform.
So the genesis of this was, I believe, there was a proposal on North 4th Street and the issue of parking in R2 and R3 was discussed. And I think at that time, the council chose not to make any changes to the parking. Mm-hmm. And I believe there was, with the understanding that we would subsequently have a workshop or more information on parking. And so what you're basically, so I think that's just a matter of, I think, talking with the city manager, going back and looking at the minutes and just getting a clearer feel for the direction that council was given. But I would say, and I see the chiefs over there, the issue of the two-hour parking and what now is going on Grand Avenue. I don't know if you had anything on that or if we should just leave that alone and see if there's interest in having it on a future agenda.
Is that shake of the head mean a future agenda?
Oh, I know.
Yeah, I think. You know, as Councilmember Peterson had mentioned, parking in the city is something that probably should be discussed at a different meeting. It does include parking in some of the city lots, parking mm-hmm. on Grand, parking in general, and some of the neighborhoods. And the two-hour parking on Grand is an issue that the police department has very difficulty enforcing because we don't have parking enforcement officers to go on a timed zone to go mark some of the vehicles. Yeah. So it is kind of enforced on, okay. again, on a like a code enforcement on a complaint basis. And if businesses feel that vehicles are parked in front of their business for long periods of time, we have addressed it on specific cases. For example, in front of the U-Haul place when they park their trucks out there, we have talked to the business owners and they have been very compliant with time limits and things like that. So a number of the businesses have been receptive in the past to comply with a two-hour zone. For sale vehicles is another issue that we don't allow for two-hour zones and things like that to be parked on Grand Avenue. And I think that was part of the intent originally with the two-hour parking back when it was enacted. So, but it is a difficult issue for the police department to enforce on a continual basis on the entire strip of Grand Avenue is for the two-hour time limits.
Okay. So we'll just say, Debbie, thanks for bringing that up. And I think I know that there's a municipal code that's coming back to us hopefully very soon, and then we can.
Okay.
I had one other. I think that some of the council members received a communication from a former council member who has been concerned about the increase in our fire department budget since the year 2000. And I know all of us are aware that we at one point had a volunteer department. We've gone to full department and great service, and I still feel that it's good to look back at what we've done and see the results of the decisions we've made and learn from those, and so I don't know that I necessarily personally have a problem with that, but it would be helpful to me, and at least in response to that, to know whether we're in line with other cities our size, whether, you know, our fire department budget as a percentage of our total budget, I don't think is so much the issue. I think the issue for me is our fire department running at about the normal cost for a city of our size to provide the services that we need. And so I think it's a good exercise to go back and say, okay, here are the decisions the council made years ago. Is there anything we can learn from it? And so I don't know if anybody else shares my interest in that, and if not, then that's fair enough. Then we can let it rest. But it was something that came to me from an involved member of the community.
Okay.
Why don't you go ahead and do the research and find out how?
Well, because I have two full-time jobs.
Well, let me say this, and I'll live with whatever the council majority chooses to do. And not to belittle the comments that have come, there was this was vetted with a previous council. There was a discussion of the pros and the con of going from a volunteer to a paid per call fire department to having a full-time staff. And without getting into the details, I think we can probably find the dig up the old minutes and have everyone understand what was discussed then. And if you want to have that discussion, then we have to put it on an agenda. I'm not quite sure what the intent is. Is it just to get information? Is it to revisit that decision? Is it to revisit having the fire department? And then what next? So I just want to see where everyone is.
Didn't we receive a communication from the city manager where he addressed some of that?
Years ago. Is that about in line for what we would expect for a city of this size? So that's just my final question. And yes, I could do the research myself eventually.
Well, I guess your bigger question really is does the council majority, are you comfortable with the information provided previously by the city manager, or do you feel like we need to place something on the agenda to get more information on that?
I am comfortable with what the city manager provided.
Okay.
I think the city's done a great job on all of this, and I hate to put them to that task. That's going to take a lot of time, in my opinion, to look up all of the necessary information to make a presentation before the council. I don't think it's necessary.
I think I'm comfortable with the answers that I've received, and I think that it certainly makes sense as to we go from all volunteer to now all paid. Totally a different department. I'm perfectly fine with the way that the information that I have.
Okay.
So? I don't have an axe to grind. I just wanted to ask the questions and see where the council was on this.
No, and then you asked the question because you were approached by a member of the community, and I think we're good. The council majority believes that we've gotten sufficient information from the city manager.
Thank you.
Anyone else have any communication? Okay. City manager reports and comments. Chief Copsey.
I have no comments, but just as a reminder, I think the council is in agreement last meeting that they were all available for the October 24th Monday night meeting to discuss the CIP. Staff's ready to move forward with that, and it's just more of a reminder that meeting will be next Monday night.
6:30.
Okay. 6:30, yes.
Thank you.
Unless there's any other comments from council or desires.
Nope. Okay. Next week, 6:30, the CIP. City Attorney, any reports or comments?
No, thank you, Mayor.
You want to cover the... All right, looks like we have one closed session item tonight.
Certainly, and it is the intention of the City Council to meet in closed session on one item, and that is conference with real property negotiators regarding the Hillcrest cell tower site, with a negotiating party being the Crown Castle, Inc.
Okay, great. Thank you. And we will now recess in a closed session.